Purki Jai. Prem Shri Gaur Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudeva Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopinath Shri Mukunda Radha Kundi Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Mathura Dham Ki Jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai. Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Guranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Mahatma Vishnu Devaya. Krishna Prasaya. Mutilation. Nati Bhakti Vedanta Swami. Dinamani. Namaste. Sarasvati Devi. Gauravani Pachami. Vasesa Sanyani. Pasachari. Vandayam Sri Guru. Sri Yutanapada. Kamalam Sri Guru. Vaishnavam Chat. Shri Rupam Sadhujatam Sadhana Raghunatam Vitam Samasajivam Sadhvaitam Sadhujitam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sadhana Alita Shri Vishakam Vitam Shri Vachakalpati Vishakhi Pasangi Avatam Titanam Pavani Yurajan Om Namo Bhagavate Vahasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. April 12, 2021, Hillsborough, North Carolina. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 24, Text 22. This is Krishna trying to convince his father not to worship Indra. Sattvam rajas tamaditi. Stipipatyam taetavah. Rajasotpatyate visham. Anyoyam vidam jagat. Satvam, goodness, rajaha, passion, tamaha, and ignorance, iti, thus, stiti, of maintenance, utpati, creation, anta, and destruction, hetavaha, the causes, rajasa, by the mode of passion, utpadite, is generated, Vishram, this universe, Anyonyam, by combination of male and female, Vividham, becomes variegated, Jagat, the world, BBT translation, the causes of creation, maintenance, and destruction are the three modes of nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance. In particular, the mode of passion creates this universe and through sexual combination causes it to become full of variety. BBT purport. Anticipating the possible objection that a livelihood based on cows certainly depends on Lord Indra, who supplies rain, Lord Krishna here introduces a mechanistic theory of existence known as atheistic Sankhya. The tendency to attribute exclusive causality to the apparently mechanistic functions of nature is an old tendency indeed. 5,000 years ago, Lord Krishna referred to a doctrine already well known in human society. Sattvam rajas tamaditi. Yeah, just ants up there.
Yeah, there's.
Well, yes. Sattva majestama iti stiti patyante loketabaha rajo sat patyate vishram anyonyan vividam jagat. The causes of creation, maintenance, and destruction are the three modes of nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance. In particular, the mode of passion creates this universe and through sexual combination causes it to become full of variety. So, this statement is true, isn't it true?
It's true.
The difficulty is that it's not the whole truth. And it's nicely said in the purport, exclusive causality and mechanistic functions. So it's natural for human beings to ask, why? This question doesn't seem to arise among the animals. You know, if some animal trips and falls and breaks its leg, it doesn't ask, as far as we know, why? Why me? Why this? Why now? But we are always asking this question. Yes, we're always trying to create meaning to what happens. Am I correct? Yes? Trying to figure, what does it mean? That this good thing happens, this bad thing happens, or even, you know, to put some attribution of good or bad upon something. Why? It's one of the main questions that human beings ask when they're very young. You know, why? And then you answer that, and they ask, why that? And you answer that, and they ask, why that? And you answer that, and they ask, why that? What is the cause? Or who is the cause? I remember we had a book in the Gurukul library about thunder and lightning, and Jalpika pointed out when she was a young student that in the book it said, you know, ancient people believed that there was, you know, Thor, the god of thunder, and these people, you know, imagined, talking all about ancient people or primitive people or tribal people, and they use words like imagined, believed. And then they said, but we know that lightning is just electricity, blah, blah, blah. And then they said, but we still don't know what causes thunder and lightning. So I thought it was really quite humorous. You know, so Krishna here is saying the cause is sattva, rajas, and tamas, and particularly rajas. And all the variety we see is just due to the combination of male and female, which then produces a whole variety. Now, that's it. Now, Krishna doesn't say that's it, but he just says that's the cause. So I was thinking that there's at least four different ways that one could see causality, and each of these ways results in a different way of living. There's the purely materialistic. It's only matter. That's all. And there isn't anything else but matter. Everything is just matter. Then there's matter and there's living beings like us. There's humans and there's matter. Or the living beings we see and hear and touch with our senses on this earth, and matter. And then the next is there's matter, there's the beings we know on this earth, and then there's higher, subtler beings, there's devas. And then there's matter, there's the beings we see on this earth, there's devas, and there's God. So materialistic, just matter moving everything. And this has become, as pointed out in this BBT purport, that this philosophy must have existed thousands of years ago. But it's certainly a very prominent philosophy right now in the world. Although increasingly it's being challenged. More and more the mainstream scientists are challenging this idea that there is no such thing really as consciousness. There is no such thing really as life. Everything is just matter. But the main reason that Srila Prabhupada so strongly objected to the theory of evolution as it's often presented is that it's presented that everything is just matter. Which is kind of ironic. That would make matter have some of the attributes that we would say belong to spirit. You know, it's sort of a funny definition of matter. You know, you have nothing and then you have some tiny, dense chunk. Where did that come from? That's not explained. And then for some reason the chunk explodes. Why does it explode? That's not explained. And then when it explodes, somehow it creates order, whereas our general experience is that explosions create disorder. Yes? Anybody ever tried to put hot things in a blender? you know, it creates disorder. It explodes out of the top. Right? You have disorder. It's not that you put hot things in a blender and then you get planets, you know, revolving in your kitchen. So why did it explode? And why did that explosion create order? And then why did matter suddenly become alive and become something? I don't know, some one-celled creature, some virus or something. But even a one-celled creature is very complex. Even a virus, which they're not sure is alive or not, is very complex. I really like the book Darwin's Black Box, you know, that it's the tiniest creatures are complex beyond the range of any scientist to understand. And then why did that creature create all the variety that we see? You know, just like in this flower vase, there's so many varieties of flowers, so many varieties of trees, varieties of fish, and it's unbelievable variety. Now, it's a little hard to attribute that to matter. That's what they're saying, that we're just machines. We're just matter. The world is just matter. Somehow, by some fluke of the universe, we have something that we conventionally call consciousness, but it doesn't really mean anything. It's just like electrical impulses. Now, when a person has this mood of the world, that everything is just matter, there's, you know, ethics and morality really become just about kind of what's practical for me and what I want. There's not really a reason to have any higher ethics and morality. And, I mean, people may deny it all they want, but this whole theory of totally mechanistic, materialistic evolution supports the idea that the strong should annihilate the weak. There's just no way logically and philosophically around it. It supports concepts of racism and classism and sexism. It actually does. You know, and so people are screaming and yelling about we don't want the rich to exploit the poor, and we don't want men to exploit women, and we don't want one race to exploit another race. But if you really believe that the way everything came about was the strong getting rid of the weak and the weak dying out and only the fittest survive, then why not? Why not? That's the way we're going to keep getting better and keep evolving. So that sort of mentality leads to a very exploited society, and it leads to a view that our business is simply just to try to control matter. And so you can see that the society we live in is a direct result of this philosophy that everything is matter. And we like to see everything as matter, because if we see everything as matter, that gives us full license to exploit others. Does that make sense to everybody? You know, if I want to eat animals, then I just say that they're just matter. I want to abort my child, I say it's just a piece of tissue. You know, if I want to exploit the opposite sex, I just say, you know, they're just a thing. They're just an object for my exploitation. If I want to exploit the land and why can't I exploit it? It has no feeling. Nobody has any feeling. And there's no meaning. There really is no why at all. Everything is chance. Everything is random. I also remember when we had the Gurukul here. Some of you remember Bhakta William. He gave me this video, How the Universe Started. Of course, my first question was, who took the video? You know, so this starts out interviewing these guys, and they say, when we look out at the cosmos, we see that everything is a cold, impersonal machine. Cold, impersonal machine. All right, so the next idea is that there's matter and spirit. Or at least we're alive, you know, we're conscious, we have some differentiation between, you know, at least we human beings, at least you want to say human beings, that there's something different about us than matter. And there's different ways of looking at this. And some of these are given in the Bhagavad Gita, right, where Krishna is saying in 13:30, one who can see that all activities are performed by the body, which is created of material nature, and that the self does nothing actually sees. There's a very similar verse in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So this sort of philosophy is becoming extremely popular in the world, generally under the auspices of Buddhism. That we are just the witness. We do have a separate, we are separate from matter. There is something that's separate from matter, but still matter is doing everything. We're just the witness. The self does nothing. Now, the self, in one sense, does something. As Krishna is saying in text 21 of the 13th chapter, nature is said to be the cause of all material causes and effects, whereas the living entity is the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyments in this world. So I, as the living entity, I experience the modes of nature doing things, and I attribute some meaning to those things that causes me to suffer or enjoy. I impose a meaning upon it. And we can see that the same events can have opposite meanings imposed upon it by various people. Right, like we just had a wedding. So, you know, I could see the diehard renunciates in ISKCON, at least in the 70s, would think that that was terrible. Right, oh my God, somebody's getting married, they're falling into the deep, dark well. Right, we used to have these traveling parties that would try to capture the men, make sure they didn't get married. Or you can capture the husbands and take them away from your wives. This is all, right, you remember? That's what happened to Keshav Bharati Maharaj. And then you have the other people at the wedding that are all thinking it's wonderful. Right, the parents, they're all celebrating. So is it suffering or is it enjoyment? Well, it depends on what meaning you put on it. I mean, it's the same way with, say, you know, political issues. Is something good or something bad? Is the fact that America gives refuge to people from countries where there's hurricanes and poverty and gangs and crime, is that a good thing or is it a bad thing? You know, we have people ready to kill each other over whether or not you get a vaccine. Is it a good thing or is it a bad thing? But it's a meaning that we place on it. So Krishna says, the living entity is the cause of the suffering and enjoyments of. But everything is still happening under the modes of material nature. The living entity is witnessing, and the living entity has some experience of suffering or enjoyment, but the living entity is still not doing anything. And we also have a view here in 327. The spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are actually carried out by the modes of material nature. So the soul as just the witnesser, the soul as the imagined enjoyer and sufferer, and also the soul as the idiot. The soul as the mudha. I'm actually doing something when we're not. And the comparison in the shastra is always that of a dream. We're in a dream, we think we're doing something, but we're not. You know, in my dream I could make a lot of money, and when I wake up I look at my bank account and it's the same. Right? I mean, we're not really doing something. Or in our modern experience it could be compared to a computer game. Sadaputo used to say that, like a virtual reality, where you imagine you're doing something, but you're not actually doing anything. So this is the second philosophy. And whereas the first philosophy of materialism pushes people to be in the modes of passion and ignorance, especially passion, and to try to control matter with passion, to try to control matter with power. So this next philosophy induces people to try to control matter with sattva. So if somebody says, you know, it's just the modes of nature working, it's just the combination of sattva, rajas, and tamas, like three lights playing on a screen, I'm not actually doing anything, I'm just the witness. If I get involved, then I get pulled into the suffering and enjoyment of the world. And if I get involved, I become a complete fool. I become like a donkey, thinking that I'm the doer. So I'm going to step back and I'm going to become equipoised, and I'm going to become balanced, I'm going to meditate, I'm going to cultivate philosophy, and that way I'm going to detach myself from this world, and that way I will be happy in the world. I'll find happiness in the world. And that's the conditioning of sattva, that I will be happy. All right, then there's the concept that there's matter, there's us, and then there's also higher beings, there's devas. And of course, there's the higher beings that we think of, like Indra, Chandra, Vayu, and so forth. But there's also more subtle entities. Like in most traditional cultures, there's a deva that's in charge of the mountain, and of the river, and of the forest. And there's a deva in charge of the different kinds of flowers and so forth. And that's actually a fact, that there are these different higher beings, more subtle than we are, more powerful than we are, that are also controlling nature. And of course, this is the whole controversy of this particular lila, where Krishna's just kind of cutting them out in this discussion. He's just not, they're irrelevant. He's not saying that they don't exist. He's just saying that they're irrelevant, which is pretty insulting, actually. You know, if we were to say to anybody, the work you do is irrelevant, nobody cares whether you do it or not. Everything will just happen whether you do it or not. You know, like if you say to your superior, you say to your authority, I'm going to have to go out of town for 2 weeks. Who's going to cover my service? Oh, it doesn't matter. Somebody will do it. You're not important. You don't need to be here. It feels hard, right? It's like, well, I guess I don't matter. So, it's happening. What I'm doing is just for my own ego or something. So, of course, Krishna does explain in the Bhagavad Gita the role of the devas, right? In 3.11 and 3.12. Actually, we'll go back. 10, 11, and 12. So in the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods along with sacrifices for Vishnu and blessed them by saying, be thou happy by this yajna, because this performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and attaining liberation. The demigods, being pleased by sacrifices, will also please you. And thus, by cooperation between men and demigods, prosperity will reign for all. In charge of the various necessities of life, the demigods, being satisfied by the performance of yajna, will supply all necessities to you. But he who enjoys such gifts without offering them to the demigods in return is certainly a thief. So Krishna has arranged the universe in this view of causality, that there's the modes of nature, there's human beings and animals and plants that are all alive and souls, and then there's other souls that are in charge of manipulating the modes of material nature and manipulating the universe and taking care of the universe and taking care of things under the order of Krishna, and that we're supposed to be cooperative. So in every ancient society, there was a view like this. Every single ancient society on the earth, there was a view that there's higher beings in charge of various departments, and there's supposed to be a mood of cooperation. Just like even here at this temple, this is a really, a little microcosm. So if somebody thinks, well, I don't need to cooperate with Leela Shakti and Dear Krishna Swami, right? And I've seen that happen sometimes. I don't want to be too explicit about this, but we've seen this happen sometimes, that somebody tries to do some service here or some project here, but in a mood of non-cooperation with the temple president and the GBC. And I remember saying to one such person, that's not going to work. You can't do that. You can't, come to the temple property and do things on the temple property and do things and not like the temple president and the GBC. It's just incompatible. You have to cooperate with them. It's not just you and the temple. So it's just reasonable. Or if you go into a business and you're not going to cooperate with the CEO, you're not going to cooperate with the president, and you're just going to do your own thing. You're just going to say it's just me and the business when you're an employee. you know, it just doesn't work. Or even if you're visiting a family, you're in their home, and you just say, well, I'm just going to do whatever I want, regardless, I'm not going to cooperate with the head of the household. You know, I saw this once in a family where the grandmother would come to visit, and she would give the children sticky, hard candy to eat while they were sitting on furniture, on the upholstered furniture. And the parents would say, you know, we don't really give our children hard candy to suck on and ruin their teeth, and we certainly don't let them eat on the upholstered furniture. And the mother-in-law, she said, well, I'm just going to do whatever I want when I visit. So it became some tension. So this is how we are meant to be. And I see that this fact is not so much talked about in our Hare Krishna movement. We mostly tend to just put the devas aside and say, well, I'm just going to chant Hare Krishna, heck with the devas. But there really are devas everywhere. There are little, you know, devas that in here, in the garden and so forth. There's a very famous garden in the UK, the Fintorn Garden. Some of you may be familiar with it. Farm and garden, where they were able to grow incredible things in a very hostile environment because they were in communication with the devas there. And it was there were a couple people there, one of them who'd been a renunciate his whole life and performed a lot of tapasya and a lot of meditation and spiritual activities. And he was actually able to directly communicate with the devas there. And they would tell him, you know, don't pick this, don't trim that plant, grow this over here, put this in the soil, and they would actually direct them. It became a very, very famous, and a number of books have been written about it and so forth. And this is the way that human society is supposed to act. You know, and the devas would present themselves, we're servants of God, we're not God, we're servants of God. We don't want to be worshipped as God. It's meant to be a cooperative arrangement. So when human beings work like this, you have, as Prabhupada said, peace and prosperity in society. By the way, Prabhupada uses the word peace and prosperity at least 194 times. However, if that's the limit of one's vision, that's also faulty. When we have cultures that only see up to the devas, they don't see past the devas. And therefore, Isha Upanishad is saying, you're going to enter into ignorance if you only see up to the devas. Because you're still within this world. And therefore, Krishna is shaking this conception of just see up to the devas. I mean, if you think about it, like if we said, well, we're going to cooperate, we're going to be here cooperating with Lila Shakti and Krishna Swami, but we're not going to follow the laws of the government of the United States. It's like we don't go up to the next limit and say, well, what's the next level? We just stay on intermediate level. Or I'm going to cooperate with my immediate supervisor, but you know, I'm not going to ignore the president of the company. And of course, the irony of that is that the devas, generally speaking, in almost all circumstances, are very aware that they are servants of the Lord. That's why they're devas. They have this consciousness. I mean, they may be in there also for something for themselves and be Sakama devotees, but they're devotees. I mean, sometimes they forget, like we have instances of Indra forgetting. But that's unusual. They're in the mood that I'm the agent of God. In fact, they don't like it when their worship is independent gods. They actually get really offended. You know, they say, no, I'm just a servant. So, I mean, this would certainly be a big step up for modern society if there was some sense that everything is alive, everything has a deva in connection with it, that you can't just exploit the mountain and the river and the air and the flowers, and because there's devas connected with it. And the universe is full of life. But of course, the next step beyond that is that you see there's the modes of nature, there's ourselves as jivas, there's the devas as jivas, and beyond that, Nitya Nityanam Chaitanya Chaitanya. There is a supreme living entity. And there's none of us living entities that could compare to the supreme living entity. Right? Ishwar Paramah Krishna Satchinananda Virana Adi Radhi Govinda Sarva Karana Karana. That he's the ultimate answer to the why. We can give a why in terms of matter. We can talk about chemical reactions and mathematical laws. We can give a why in terms of human volition. We can give a why in terms of the harmony and balance and control exerted by the devas. But the ultimate why, maya dakshina prakriti suyute sacharacham hetunana hekante yajagati parivartite matta parajamana nyatkinshi datsti dinandaya. Ultimately, the why is Krishna. Right? Sutra Mahaganaiva. He's the thread under the pearls. So if someone's wearing a string of pearls, you don't see the string, you just see the pearls. But you can understand by the fact that the pearls are staying in a particular place that there must be a string. Like Prabhupada said, that the Lord is holding the planets like you hold a fistful of dust in your hands. And as explained very nicely by the Yamadutas to Yamaraj, there's got to be one person in charge. Logically speaking, it can't be just matter, which tends to chaos and entropy. It can't be just humans, who also tend to disorder and violence and selfishness. It can't even be just the devas, who sometimes fall into illusion, whose powers are much greater than ours, but still limited. And every story in every culture about the devas talks about them having this and that problem sometimes. And also, the Yamadutas point out that if you have a committee, they can disagree. Just like we disagree. One person thinks a wedding is wonderful, another person thinks it's terrible. Somebody thinks building of a shopping center is wonderful, another person thinks it's terrible. And that's going to go on among the devas too. One person will say, he should be punished. Another person will say, no, he should be rewarded. That's the argument that the Yamadutas give. And therefore, there has to be an ultimate decider. Was it W who said, I'm the decider? You know, there's got to be an ultimate decider who says, this is good, this is bad. And that's where we come to the ultimate why. Now, it's kind of funny that Krishna is cutting out the devas in this lila. And he's also not positing himself, partially at least because in his Vrindavan mood, he doesn't really want to get the resonance of Vrindavan into the fact that he's God. You know, so he's sticking to these lower levels. But once we understand that there's the material modes, there's us, there's the devas, and there's ultimately God, and we look at those whys, why does Krishna do anything? Why does everything happen? We find perfect justice in the laws of karma, and we find perfect love in mercy and bhakti that's above the laws of karma. And these are the two whys. That's the two answers of whys for everything. That for those in materialistic consciousness, there's perfect justice. For those who seek spiritual consciousness, there's perfect mercy and there's perfect love. And the reason behind everything for materialists is justice, and the reason behind everything for an aspiring spiritualist is love. And then what do we do? You know, if you just see things mechanistically, you're going to be in Rajagun or Tamagun. If you see that there's a living being, you're going to try to come to Sattvagun. If you see that there's us living beings in the devas, you're also going to try to be in Sattvagun. And if you see that there's matter, us, the devas, and ultimately Krishna, you're going to come to bhakti, you're going to come to Vishuddha Sattva. One is going to come to love, one is going to come to surrender, one is going to come to service. One is going to be inspired. I want to, you know, if he's doing everything ultimately in love, then I want to act in love. And if he doesn't have the faults of an ordinary living being or even the faults of the devas, and I don't want to offend any of the devas, but, you know, then I should just serve him. And this takes us to the ultimate why, and interestingly enough, it takes us beyond the modes of nature and beyond this world entirely. So what we believe matters, you know, it's not like it's just something irrelevant, but what we believe as the cause directs how we behave and how we seek our own happiness. So questions, comments? Yes, Marsh.
Just a question about the nomenclature. Your intermediate whys are actually hows, and the ultimate why is the teleological.
Okay, so my intermediate whys were hows?
Are actually hows, and then you get to the ultimate, which is a
teleological. Well, wouldn't that be true only if you've already accepted that the ultimate is true?
Yeah, the ultimate teleological means the purpose. So why is actually a purpose question rather than a how question?
Okay, but suppose that I would see that there's nothing beyond the modes and like human consciousness, then that would no longer be a how, it would also be a why.
That's a how. You know, then it's just modes. That's how. How comes a function. Why means it entails some purpose or reason.
Wouldn't there be a purpose entailed? Because no. I thought about this too.
There's no purpose in just like entropy or just like chance. There's no. That's
okay, well, that's the first one. So then the why is there's no why.
Well,
it's all chance.
You could say that, but really...
Or you could say there's a why on the lowest level. You could say...
Why there's no why.
You could say the why is so the strong prevail.
That's not why. That's just the way things function. See, why...
So there then just isn't any why.
Yeah, there isn't a why at that point.
All right, so what about the next... What about the next level of the Buddhist?
Why is when there's an intention?
Okay, what about the next level of the Buddhist where I can have some intention of withdrawal?
Yeah, the intention. You have a personal why, but there's no why to the whole.
There's no universal why.
There's no universal why.
All right, then what about the next level where I see the devas as supreme and nothing above the devas? Is there a why there?
The devas have their why. But ultimately, beyond there, there's no why. Yeah, anyway.
Okay, so I think you've explained it very well.
Yeah.
So at the bottom level, because it's only matter, there cannot be any why because matter is...
Because there's no why.
At the second level, where I'm saying there's matter and some sense of self that can be detached...
There's an intention there.
Then there's an intention on the part of the self that can be detached.
Part of the self, but not in part of...
But not in the cosmos.
There's not a universal why.
Then on the third level, where I say there's matter, humans, and the devas, the why then rests with the devas.
But there's no universal.
But there's no universal why.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
If we deal with radical monotheism in the West, like Islam or Protestant Christianity, there's just God and humans, and none of the other stuff exists.
Well, that's why a lot of sociologists of religion say that Protestantism has been the bridge to secularism, where you stop seeing the world as divine.
Well, yeah, the world is not divine. It's just divine and
world.
Although most Muslims and Protestant Christians do have some belief in angels.
Yeah.
So they don't deny angels entirely. But yeah, that's been the gateway, the denial of the Catholic and Orthodoxy views of Christianity has really contributed to a secular mechanistic view of the world. So Prabhupada, he judged.